Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. What happens when you're a very creative person and realize one of your outlets is the fact that you're a psychic and that you're able to see spirits and talk to them and relay messages to help people? Well, my next guest is not only neurodiverse, but she's a very creative person and an artist as well, but she's also a psychic medium. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage, and let's learn more about this fabulous person. See you there.
I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't fit in. I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I have Shelley Devine. Welcome to the show, Shelley.
Hi, thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
So why don't we start off with, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Okay, I am a professional artist, author, and I'm also a psychic medium and Reiki master. And the one thing that I really want to share with you on the show today is the book that I co-authored that went to number one. It's Beyond the Ordinary by Mandy Nicholson. I'm sure you're familiar with the book that I'm talking about.
Yes, I have interviewed several women already from the book, and Mandy included.
Oh, good, good, yes. So, yeah, I'm one of the co-authors in there.
So, why don't we start off with, when were you diagnosed?
Okay, so I have not officially been diagnosed with Asperger's or ADHD or autism or anything like that. But as far as neurodiversity goes, it means that your mind works differently. And what makes my mind work differently, there are two things. One of them is that I am a medium. So I do see dead people and I talk to them. And so that's a different way that my mind works. And I've also like a year ago was diagnosed with Parkinson's. And that has really affected the way I think as well.
All right, so let's start off with when you realized you were able to see dead people, did you think you were going crazy?
It's a funny story because I saw them all through my childhood, but as a child, you just think that it's your imagination, right? And then when I just kind of, ignored it. When I reached my teen years, my mom tried to tell me that I was psychic and that I had these certain gifts, and I didn't believe it. I didn't believe in it. And so I didn't believe her. We didn't have the greatest relationship. So it was hard for me to believe her. But all my life, I've always been very psychic. And every time something would happen, I would always brush it off, like or jokingly say, "Yeah, I'm psychic." Yeah, they're like, "How did you know that?" Just I would jokingly brush it off. When 2020 came, I had my awakening, my full awakening, and realized. And the way that came about was some things were happening. We had just moved into this new house, and some things were happening in the house that I couldn't explain and I couldn't ignore anymore. So I decided to get a reading from a psychic, which I had never had. And I thought, okay, I'm not going to say anything to her. If she says I'm psychic, I will believe it. So we did. We had this call. The first thing out of her mouth was that I'm very psychic. So I'm like, okay, I guess I have to believe that now. And I was asking her, she said, "Do you have any questions?" And I said, "Yes, I do. I have this one being who follows me from house to house, wherever I live, he always follows and he fills my room with cigarette smoke. And for the longest time, I thought that it was coming from outside, from neighbors. But w in 2020, we moved out onto a mountain and we had no neighbors. It was in the middle of winter. All our vents were closed and the smell came. So I asked her, I said, "Who is this?" And she kind of described him to me, and I didn't recognize him as any of my family. And I said, "Do you think it could be someone on my husband's side?" And she's like, "Sure." And then I was like, "Well, but why do I see him? Why does he come to me?" And she goes, "Because you're a medium, honey." I was like,
You're attracted to mediums.
"What?" That never even crossed my mind that I could be a medium.
It reminds me, there's a TV show out there. You've probably seen it. Oh God, I'm trying to remember. She's a psychic medium. He's a retired detective, New York detective. They never meet until the reveal.
Right. Yeah, I've watched that.
She walks through the house and she'll see the ghosts and the spirits and she'll talk to them, figure out why they haven't moved on. He'll do the background research of the house, and then when they meet, she'll have one ghost in particular that she'll have the sketch artist sketch. And then she'll show it to him and he's like, "That's the guy. That's the person that's been bothering." And then they'll go into this history of why he's there.
Yeah. I think that show was called Dead Files.
Yeah, Dead Files. Now,
Absolutely.
I know you had said to me in the when you booked that you have OCD. How severe is it? Because I know there are those, I've talked with those who have severity to where they can't do anything without like knocking on something or. How severe is your OCD?
It's not severe. It's enough to be annoying. It's like, dang it, I have to go check and make sure the door's locked. I know I checked it, but I will climb out of bed and go and check it again. So it's kind of like that. And it doesn't stop me from doing anything, and it's not like super severe. It's like I said, it's just enough to be noticed. My husband noticed it. He calls me OCD all the time.
Well, that's sort of like me. I mean, I'll walk out, lock the door, I'm walking my dog, and I'll stop for a minute and I'm like, "Did I lock the door?" My mind just goes blank for a minute there. I'm like, "Did I lock it?" And then I literally have to drag her back to the house, check the door, and I'm like, "Okay." Or even if I go out with my mother and I'm like, "I don't remember if I locked the door." She's like, "Well, your brother's home. Your brother's gonna be kicking the dog. He'll lock it." I've got like I would call it almost a perfectionism OCD version of OCD.
That's me.
Yeah.
That hits the nail on the head. I would call myself a perfectionist before I would call myself OCD, and I know that they go hand in hand.
And the best example I can give of that is back in the day when cell phones had this, you buy the little screen protector, then you get the squeegee to get all the air bubbles out. I would see the air bubble and it would drive me nuts. And I'd sit there and I'd rub it and rub it and rub it until I put a hole in it. And then I'd just tear it off and throw it in the garbage. I'm like, "Oh, there's money down the drain right there." Or everything's gotta be perfect, can't be off by one. It's got to be perfectly even. That's the kind of OCD I have.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Does it ever stop you from doing something because you're worried you're going to get into that OCD? Like perfectionism will cause people not to try things because they don't think they can do it perfect. And I don't know, does that work with With the OCD?
Not really, no.
No, okay.
But I do have another form of it where, and I was told, I forgot what it was called. I think it was called, it's where I'll go over a situation in my head over and over. It'll happen, and then I'll come home and I'll just go over that situation in my head through several different scenarios, like how it could have gone differently.
Yeah.
Now, you weren't diagnosed, you said, with autism, but do you think you have it?
I think when I was invited to be a co-author in this book, and this book is for it's for the creative and the neurodivergent minds. I have a very of a creative mind, which I have come to learn has a lot of similarities to neurodivergent. Like the anxiety, I have creator's anxiety, meaning that if I want to start a project, I get so anxious. Is like, what if it doesn't come out right? You know, what if it doesn't look good? I'm just not going to do it, right? So I'm more on the creative side, and the creatives, our minds are not, they don't work the same as normal. Of course, you ask, what is normal? Maybe we're normal, you know, and everybody else is different. But yeah, my mind doesn't work the same as others. And so I've kind of self-diagnosed myself as neurodivergent. And then to back it up, it's like, well, I do talk to dead people. So that's that. And with Parkinson's, my brain is not the same. And I struggle with memory, and I get lost sometimes. Like, what am I doing? Like right in the middle of doing something, I'll stop and I'll get nervous and ask my husband, honey, what am I doing? What am I doing? And he's like, you're getting some dinner. Like, you know, that's right. Okay, that's what I'm doing. So, yeah, I've always been different, even as a kid, but I've just never medically been diagnosed with anything in particular.
Now, I know what you're talking about with the creative side of
Yes.
it. I, first of all, I had talked with a guy who talked about how there's two different sides of the brain, the creative and the logical. I'm very creative. I'm able to think logically, but when it comes to things like logic in the sense of programming, my mind is a blank.
Yeah.
I'm very much a creative person, and that's how I am.
Yeah.
I mean, the way my podcast is, it's the way I've been all my life.
Yeah.
Let's get into the book a little bit, and then
Okay.
we'll go back to your job, what you do.
Okay.
What made you want to share your story with the world?
First of all, when Mandy asked me, I love Mandy. She is my creative genius mentor. I went through a business training with her where she helps creatives with their business. Like, that's her specialty. But I took her course like many years ago, but we've always kept in touch. And when she asked me if I would do a chapter in this book, and I thought to myself, yeah, I'm a creative. I don't know what neurodivergence is. I had to learn about that. But I was excited because, number one, I am an author. I do have two books out, and I am working on another one. So I wanted to be a part of her book. I wanted to be a part of this whole thing because she's amazing. And she was just talking about how great this is going to be. And also because I'm a bit of a hermit. I have a comfort zone that I don't like to step out of very often. And I thought this would be a good way for me to step out of my comfort zone because I know she wanted us to do podcasts and stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh. But, and the story I wrote is a very, very special story that changed my life. And actually, my whole reason for wanting to tell the story, my message, there it is. My message is that art heals and that you can use art, you can do art, any kind of art, and it is a healing therapeutic process, even if you're not an artist. Right? That's the message I wanted to get out. And so the story in the book is about loss of three of my loved ones at the same time and how I almost didn't survive that. But it was art that kept me anchored to reality, if that makes sense. And so that I wrote that story, and it's a very heartbreaking story, but I wanted to get the point across that we all have traumas, losses, grief, illness, anything like that. And I so strongly believe that art can heal, that I want to get that message out.
Now, would you say your art would be your hyper focus? Something that you focus on intently, and all of a sudden time and everything else just narrows down and you become time blind.
Yes. Yes. And I used that purposely in the first few months after their passing. I would just grab my tablet because I have a whole studio, I have a whole art business. But I would just grab my tablet and it had a little painting app on it. And I would just doodle. Like I didn't have to think about, oh, what am I going to draw? I would just start making marks and start playing, and it would bring me. Part of it was distraction, but part of it was connecting my soul and the art. This is hard to explain, but I would connect with it, and it would take me home to who I really am outside of the grief. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's, I would definitely hyper focus on that when I was going through the really bad parts.
Now, what is it like to share your book and to realize your book, the book that you're in, is the number one bestseller?
I am blown away, but Mandy said we would get there and we did. And I am so proud to say that I am a number one best-selling author. It's something that makes me proud, and it's also because of something amazing that we did. The book is amazing. So it's like I'm proud that it's such an amazing book. I'm proud that we made number one. And I'm proud that this book is going to help a lot of people.
Now, what is it, what's it mean to you that when someone is reading this, they actually can relate to it? How does that make you feel when someone, if you get a message from somebody and says, "Hey, I read your chapter in this book and I really can relate to it. I've gone through something similar." What is it, what would that mean to you?
That would mean a lot to me because I am a spiritual coach, and I would love to just help anybody if they're fresh in it, help them through it. I actually started a program called Let's Heal Together. When I was in the depths of it, I thought, do I need to heal first and then do this? And it's like, no, I should do it now. And I've gone to grief sessions, and the act of being able to tell your story and talk about your loved ones that you've lost to somebody and have that somebody listen and understand, that's very powerful, because a lot of people don't understand. My husband was amazing, and he loved my best friend very much too. So he was amazing with me. But he hasn't lost a loved one. And so he couldn't relate super deeply. You know, and I talked to my sisters, I talked to my friends, I talked to my son, and they're all just like, they don't know what to say to me. So I absolutely would love people to contact me if they even just want to just talk, because I understand.
I can relate with you because not only have I lost my father in 2017, we've lost cousins, family friends. In this year alone, we've lost, I think, four or five people, friends and
Oh,
family. We
yeah.
lost my mom's cousin early on in the year. We lost another cousin just recently. My father had died in 2017.
Yeah.
And then family friends throughout the years, and it's just been really hard on my mom and I.
Yeah. Yep. You do. You get it. You understand it. Another point that I would really like to help people understand when they're going through this is that their loved ones are still here. They're not gone. They are gone in the physical form on earth, but they are still here. And that's why I love the work I do as a medium, because I get to connect people with their loved ones on the other side. And I do what's called evidential mediumship, meaning I get evidence from their loved ones. Like, tell me something that there is no way that I could possibly know. And they'll give me a piece of something and I'll say it. And then my client's like, oh my God, you're really talking to, you know, it's like there's generic way to do it. You know, I see a grandmother and she's baking and she's cooking. Most everybody's grandmother bakes and cooks. So I go for the pieces of information that they cannot deny that I'm in contact with their loved one.
Now, do you have any sensory issues?
Sensory, as far
As
as,
to light, like sensitive to light, smell,
oh yeah.
taste, sound.
Yes. Lights, yes. Sound, I'm very sensitive to. I can't be in crowds with a lot of people. I'm an empath, so I can feel everybody's energy, and it's very difficult for me to be in a group of people.
Now, are you hypersensitive to anything?
I think
Like,
I'm hypersensitive, period. I am hyper aware of everything. I'm hypersensitive to noise, and you know, if people are arguing, or like I cannot follow politics because I cannot handle the arguing and that stuff like that. I can't do that. I have to stay in like a Zen mode as much as I can.
all right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
What was the first time you realized you were able to communicate with those who had passed?
So when I talked to the psychic in 2020 and she told me I was a medium, I had to think about it. I had to process it. I had to figure it out. And so I called my sister and I told her, I said, you'll never guess this, but I was just told that I'm a medium. And she's like, wow, well, what's it like? And I'm like, well, you know how when you go to bed at night and you close your eyes, you've got all those people walking around just while you're falling asleep. And she looks at me and she's like, no, that doesn't happen to me. So I realized all those people walking around, those were spirits. And I didn't know it. I just thought it was in my head. So I started to explore it and read about it and learn about it. And then there are these practice groups. So you could practice your mediumship when you're newly awakened and you want to read for people. So we have these groups, and I went to the groups and I said, I've never given a reading before in my life, so I'm just going to listen. And then I couldn't help shake. I kept seeing this person right next to me. So I went ahead, raised my hand. I said, okay, I have this guy standing next to me, and he looks like this, this, and this. And he said this, this, and this. And sure enough, one of the ladies in there raised her hand. She goes, yeah, that's my dad. Yeah, that's the face I made. I was like, I'm really doing this. Like it took me a good long time to really believe truly that I was actually doing this. And so many readings that I've given to people all over the world that I have never met, and I've gotten their great-great-grandfather's name and stuff like that. I had to start believing it, you know?
Well, let me ask, when you realized you were a medium, did things start to make, did your past and everything that's been happening to you in the past start to make sense to you and like fill in the blank?
Absolutely. Because more on the psychic side of it, because I really didn't know I was a medium. But all growing up, I knew when something was going to happen. I knew, like, say, in my teenage years and I'm driving the car, I could see someone pull out in front of me 5 minutes, not 5 minutes, 5 seconds before they pull out in front of me. So there was all these things. I always knew. My mom would get so mad because I always knew what all my presents were under the tree. She'd say, you're not allowed to touch them, because if I touched them, I could figure out what they were. So the psychic part of it, and the knowing, and the being an empath, and the sensitivity. Yeah, I've been like that all my life. All my life. I think that's where the shyness came from.
Now, you mentioned you're an empath. How do you handle that? Because, I mean, you walking, how do you handle shopping? How do you handle going out in public without being overwhelmed?
Okay. So I learned the first thing I learned when I realized I was an empath is how to protect myself. And that's by grounding. Okay. That's by connecting to the earth. What I do, like, say, if I know I'm going to a party or I'm going to Costco, which I hate to do because there's so many people, I imagine roots coming out of the bottom of my feet, going down into the earth, all the way to the core, and wrapping around a beautiful crystal. And then I imagine this big protective bubble. Like, I just picture myself putting up this bubble because I'm grounded to earth, and I'm going to put up this protection and I'm going to be protected. And that works. But there's times that I forget to do that. And I can do it real quick because I do it all the time. I can do it real quick. I have also, before I learned how to do that, I had an incident. I've had a few incidents where I've come in contact with dark energy. I don't believe in like dark, bad, scary things. Like I don't deal with it. I don't believe it. Even if it exists, I don't believe it because I don't want that in my life. But I have been able to sense dark energy in houses and off of certain people. And it's hard because I'm trying to, like the house that I was in, we were talking to this man about keeping our horses on his property. And I got sick, my headache got really bad, and I got sick to my stomach. And I said, I'm just going to step outside because I thought I was going to be sick. Minute I stepped outside, I felt great. And I was like, oh, okay. That's when I started to figure out dark energy and how it affects me. And many, many years later, I was at a barn where I kept my horses, and there was a particular person that I could feel, even when I didn't hear him walking up behind me. I got that sick feeling in my stomach, and I turn around and he was there, and everybody loved him. Oh, he's so nice to everybody. But I knew, I just felt like I couldn't be around him.
That reminds me of like in the paranormal shows where they're investigating and all of a sudden they get this dark feeling that's in the pit of their stomach and they're like, we can't be in this area. That the minute they step outside, it's like it's not there anymore. And the way they describe it is there's so much dark energy because of where they're investigating, if it's like a jail cell or if it's someplace that something bad has happened, that energy is very dark and it's made them sick to their stomach.
And those are the kind of places that they like to investigate for the shows. And I love those shows. I watch them all the time. I watched them before I even believed in
I love those shows. I used to watch Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunters. They're great shows. I mean, what's funny is the minute I lost my father, I stopped watching TV. Actually, I should say the minute I went away to college, I stopped watching TV because my mom and I don't like the noise in the morning. We like it quiet. Because when I was in college, I had no TV in my room. I just had my laptop. So I would watch TV when I wanted to and then close it up, and that was it for me. But when I got home, I remember I was watching TV, and my dad was just diagnosed with cancer. And I remember the phone call vividly. My brother's saying, grab the paper. Mom says, get the paperwork. And we're going to the hospital. And in my pit of my stomach, I knew what the paperwork was. That was in case of my death and everything else, which did good happen. And I was watching a paranormal show. And at that point forward, I just stopped watching them. I record them, but I have not get yet to get back to it. My mother
There's
is an astrologer,
oh, yeah.
and we both believe in the paranormal.
Good.
I do reading, I do oracle readings for friends.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. I love that. I could tell that you are already into this, into
I'm
these
very much
gifts.
into, I'm very much. My mom has got a good friend who's a nun who is a psychic medium as well, and a Reiki healer like you. So yeah, we're very much believers in it. What was it like when you realized you were a medium? Was this just like, oh my God, this is why all these dead people are following me around all over the place?
I loved it. I loved it. And I'll tell you why. Because I, for some reason, was always drawn to the ghost stories and the spooky stuff and the haunted houses. And then when those shows started with the ghost hunters, I was like obsessed with it. And this is all before I realized I could do any of that. Do you remember when John Edwards first started his show?
Trying to think of what show it was.
John Edwards Crossing Over, I think it was the show.
I think
It
many, many years
was,
ago. Yeah.
yeah, it was a
That's the
long
one
time
where he's
ago.
got an audience and he's talking with one person. Like, okay, I'm gonna talk to your so and so for you. Yeah, I remember that show.
And I was watching it, and I'm a very skeptical believer. I have to have an experience. I have to have proof because I've got a very scientific way about me, but I believe. Well, I believe now. You wouldn't believe the stuff I believe in now because I've seen it. But when I was watching that show, I was thinking to myself, okay, this is all planned. This is staged. This is scripted. Until one day he was talking to a family and he said, okay, so there's someone in your family by the name of Rose. And they're looking at each other. No, they could not. They're like, no, there's nobody named Rose anywhere in our family. He's like, okay, well, when you get home, do a little research and, let me know. Sure enough, they went home and they found out that they had a great, great aunt, Rose. And then I'm
Wow.
thinking, okay, so how did he do that? That's pretty tricky. So I just kind of kept watching it and watching it. And one episode, he had told a lady that her father sent her a hummingbird. And she was like, wow, I got in my car the other day and there's this hummingbird in front of my windshield, just right in front of me. He was just hovering there, staring at me. And she was just like, oh my gosh. And he said, yeah, that your father sent that to you. So my father had recently, very recently passed. So I asked God, source, universe, please send me a hummingbird from my dad. I just want to know that he hears me and that this is real. And I got my hummingbird the very next day. And let me tell you how it happened. It was amazing. I was giving riding lessons. So I had a student on a horse and I was on another horse. We were done with the lesson. So we're just sitting on the horses and we're just chatting. And this is in my backyard behind my house. And we're just chatting and chatting. And all of a sudden, this hummingbird comes, flies probably 5 feet in front of me, pointed at me, flapping his wings, just staring at me. And I stopped talking because I knew what was happening. And my student's like, Shelly, look at that. Look at that hummingbird. He's staring at you. And she's just going on and on. And I couldn't talk because I was just like, oh my gosh, this is happening. And then he flew off. And I turned to my student and I said, do you by any chance believe in ghosts? Because
Yeah.
I want to tell you what that was. And it was amazing because I didn't have any flowers. There was nothing. We never had hummingbirds. This was in Norco, California. It was dry. I had dry arena and nothing for a hummingbird to even drink. No reason for him to be there, except for the reason he was a messenger from spirit. So
Yeah,
that.
we've had things happen to us since my dad passed, and my mom and I know he's still with us.
Oh, yeah.
The TV, well, I remember once the TV went on in the middle of the night. At first, I thought maybe I had it on a pause timer, and then it just kicked back on. My mom was like, "No, that's your father, because your dad would like to watch TV." Lights would flicker. Doors would open. I mean, the best experience we've had, and I talked about this in my Halloween show, was my mom and I are driving in our car, radio's down low, commercial comes on for changing your furnace filters. And my dad was always one about reminding me to change the furnace filter, and the volume went up. And it normally doesn't do that. And my mom and I just look at each other and we're like, that's got to be dad telling
Yeah.
me to remind us to change the Brita filter.
Yeah. That's wonderful. That's being open to signs.
Yeah, I mean, just because we believe. I mean,
Yeah.
it's just who we are. And I'm a very open-minded person.
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
mean, I'll give you a little background on myself. I'm autistic with ADHD. I have a bit of OCD. I'm also dyslexic. But I'm a very open-minded person. I believe in everything, unless you prove me wrong.
Yeah.
But I believe.
Do you
Go on.
feel like that's do you feel like that's from your autism? Or, do you feel like, because I'm wondering if,
The openness, yes.
yeah, right? That's what I
That's
would
part of
think.
being autistic. And I remember, I can tell you a really good story. I went to college for my I went to England for my master's. And I told nobody I was autistic. And one day I'm walking with a friend of mine. And she turns to me, she goes, Reed, can I ask you a question? I'm like, sure. Actually, no. This happened after I graduated. And we were messaging each other back and forth. And she goes, can I ask you a personal question? And I'm like, hey, you know me. We're friends. You can ask me whatever you want. And she's like, are you autistic? And I was like, taken back. I'm like, oh my God, yeah. How did you know? And she's like, well, I work with a younger autistic children as part of my psychology program, and you have a lot of the traits they do. You're very open and you're overly friendly. You have trouble not knowing what to say at the right time, right or wrong time, and you're very open. I'm
Yeah.
like, yeah. He's like, are you doing anything about it? Are you seeing anyone or talking? I'm like, not really. I don't need to. I'm very high functioning, so. I just have people remind me, or I tell people if I'm with a friend or something, hey, if you think I'm going to say something, poke me or tap me and say, read, not the right time. And I've had that happen with my friend where we were at a Christmas celebration dinner, and some of the guys were a little bit drunk and goofing around, and I was about to say something to them, and my friend just tapped me on the phone. She's like, not now, man. Not now. They're
Yeah.
drunk. I say something that they'll take the wrong way.
Yeah.
And so I sat back and I kept my mouth quiet.
That's a good friend.
But I can tell you another story. My mother had asked her medium psychic friend to talk to my father. And she said, give me a picture of him and I'll talk. And then she came back with all this stuff and everything was true. She pinpointed who was sitting next to him. He listened to us. But the one thing that blew her mind is she's like, he's surrounded by poppies, and we couldn't figure that out until we went to visit the graveyard, and he was in the poppy section of the
Oh,
cemetery.
wow. That's so wonderful.
And that just blew our mind.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so it's you asked me earlier how I felt when I figured out I was a medium. I mean, I absolutely love it because I've always wanted it. I've always wanted magic to be real. I've always wanted, that kind of thing to be real. And now that I'm actually a professional medium, I love it because it is a healing act. And not just for my client, but for me. I get healing as I'm, giving them the information. I'm not sure how that works, but after I do a reading and I get up and I need to go ground myself so I can let go of that energy, I'm just like, I feel great. I'm happy. I feel so good. And I know I'm getting healing from it.
Probably because you're helping somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, like
Yeah.
one of the things my mom wanted to do is make sure my dad knew that he had passed on. And that And that was when she found out that, yes, he knew. It made her happy. I mean,
Good.
that's what you do, is you talk to people who help them talk to their past, their loved ones, and you
Yeah.
want to make sure they're in a good place.
Yeah. Yep. And I tell everybody, because they always ask, is how's my mom, or how's my, loved one? And I say, I just want you to know that whenever they cross over and they're in spirit, they're great. They don't hold the feelings, they don't hold anger, regret, sadness. They don't hold any of that, but they do still comprehend it so that they can show it, to us living people. Like, say, for example, if I was talking to a lady's mom and she wants to know, does my mom know that I was there with her when she passed? And I was like, yes. And she says, is she okay? Was she okay? I'm like, she's great. But she understands, because she would the my client was crying. She goes, but she understands your sadness. She doesn't feel these feelings, but she understands how we feel. And when we have guilt, and when we question, does she know, like, we fought the last time we talked, and I feel so guilty. And they see that, but it doesn't matter to them. It matters to us. We're the ones that have to let work through that and let that heal. But they're great when they're over there. But I do want to say there are instances when they can get stuck. And that's kind of like in the in-between. And I have learned from, I have a great spiritual mentor that who has taught me so much stuff. I have learned how to cross people over, and I've learned how to recognize it. If they come at me with an emotion, a strong emotion, like I'm feeling, oh my, I'm feeling all this anger, or if they're, I feel so sad that I start crying, they haven't crossed over. They're stuck because they're still giving those emotions. Does that make sense? And
Kind of.
so they shouldn't be feeling that. They can convey it. They can say, I understand that you feel guilty, but I am not angry at you at all. You should not feel guilty. That was the role in your life that I had to play. And that's what it was. And so, yeah, so that's how I know when they're stuck, and then I know how to cross them over. So,
Let's go back a little bit.
sure.
How did you get to become an artist?
An artist? I was just born with that one.
So.
The true story, the true story, and it's not, it's a happy story, but it's not a happy story at the same time. I had a rough childhood. I was raised by an alcoholic mom, and I did not have a dad, and I had two older sisters. And I love you, Mom. I was abused. And so my escape would be to go in the closet and draw. I would even go in there and I'd write stories, just to get into my own little world. Again, it started with that healing me or keeping me safe. As a young child, it started that. That's why I'm so adamant about art. And art could be music. If you're a musician, if you're, if you sew, it's still art, and it can still heal you.
What people don't realize is their creativity is such a healing thing. People are so afraid to share it because it's this because of it. But I realized my creativity is my outlet. And people need to understand that they need to take advantage of their outlet, because I always like to think, share your ability with the world. Let them see
Yes.
what you do, because who knows who's watching, who knows who's listening, or who knows who's browsing the web and who's going to come across it. But I have a good friend that says, do something you love to do, do it until someone notices it and wants to pay you for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what I say, it is your outlet is your creative side. Use it to your advantage.
I'm so glad that you said that because that is a point that I have a program called Awaken Your Creative Spirit. It's an 8-week program. But in this program, I teach people mindfulness, I teach them meditation, and I teach them to open up their intuition and their creativity and how to quiet down your inner perfectionist. But I'm so glad you said what you just said because part of my teaching is that I do teach people to express themselves through art because your canvas can be a mirror, it can be a portal, it can be somewhere that you manifest something that you want. So self-expression is so important. And I'm so glad you brought that up because I forgot I was going to bring that up, but thank you for that.
No problem. I mean, people don't realize your outlet is there for a reason. It's
Yeah.
your escape to get out of your head, out of the reality we're in, to put you in a safer space. And that's one of the things I tell people about my podcast is when you come on, it's a safe space.
Yeah.
For those who are autistic, I say, listen, you don't have to mask on my show. Be who you want to be. Be yourself. If you're goofy, be goofy. This is a safe place. I will not judge.
Yeah. That's wonderful. And I appreciate that so much too. I am now, like I said, I am a professional psychic medium. But before I came out with that and told people, I was scared too. I was terrified because me and my sisters all thought that my mom was crazy when she talked about that stuff. And I was scared to tell people that I'm psychic and I'm a medium. And it took me a while and it took me a lot of inner work and a lot of past life regression work to realize, back in the day, mediums were considered witches because they spoke with the dead. So technically, I would be considered a witch, even though I don't like practice witchcraft. So there's that persecutor's imprint that's on my soul from lifetimes where I've been murdered because I was a witch. And I had a medium explain this to me. She says, "Honey, you've been hung, you've been burned at the stake, you've been beheaded so many times in so many lifetimes. And this is why you're so afraid to come out with who you really are." And she said, "In this day and age, you can. You're fine. There's people on TV doing it. It's okay." So I was like, I had to let my family know first.
What was it like to come out and tell people, hey, I'm a medium? Must have been freeing.
It was freeing. It was, I didn't, I wasn't so brave when it came to my son. My son is, oh, what am I? He's 36 now. And I was really afraid to tell him because he knew about my mom, and we'd always talk about how Nana was crazy and she would talk about these things. And I just didn't want to say to him, "Hey son, guess what?
I'm like Nana.
Nana wasn't crazy," because I'm doing the same thing. So with him, it was kind of a letting a little information out here and there slowly. And I didn't ever come right out and tell him. I said something, I think I told my nephew, and my nephew said, "Oh yeah, Kel told me." I'm like, oh, so he knows. Yeah, and it was just, my husband was the first one to know, because I went out and told him. I said, "I guess I'm a medium and I don't know what that is all about." And he's like, "Okay." But then he saw me go through the process and he saw me do readings. And he knows that I'm not crazy because we've been married 25 years. And he knows
Congratulations.
me. I'm not going to suddenly, go crazy and say I'm this and that. So he had no choice but to believe me. And it's funny because now he is starting to, be more awake and open to signs. And I mean, we all have it. We all have the capability. We're all born with it. It's just a matter of if we follow it and practice it, or are just really born with it, or just think, eh, that stuff's not real. Everybody's got their own choice.
It's funny, you had mentioned earlier about stepping out of the comfort zone. I recently wrote a book. It's being edited now.
Okay.
It's about stepping outside the comfort zone. It follows me through my life with advice and stories, but with one of the biggest messages in it that you need, no matter who you are, you need to step out of your comfort zone because the world just keeps moving. And you're going to get to the point where you're 80 years old and you're going to look back at your life and you're going to say, I should have, could have, would have. And
Yeah.
you realize you don't have much time left. You only have one life to live. Enjoy it while you got it.
And I don't want those regrets, as it is with the Parkinson's, I don't know how much time I have. My mom had Parkinson's, and she died with Parkinson's, and I took care of her, so I know what it's like. And although I'm very early in it, I get scared because I'm not sure. I start to think, well, am I really seeing these people, or is it my Parkinson's dementia or whatever? And I know it's not. I know it's real. And I have been, when I wrote my story in the book, I put in there that I was diagnosed with Parkinson's, and still a lot of my friends and family do not know I have it. So I just put that out there in the world, and I'm doing it again here. And it's scary. It's really scary. When I wrote my story, which talks about the loss of my best friend and my cousin and my horse. And it talks about how art healed me, art saved my life. And I mentioned how life keeps challenging you. And oh, by the way, here's an example. I just got diagnosed with Parkinson's. So it never ends. Life is life. And you've got to keep going through this. So I put that in my story. And I was all comfortable with it. Okay, I'm doing this. And book came out. I read my chapter and I had the strangest reaction. I had sudden panic.
You thought people would look at you as some kind of weirdo.
Yeah, because I had just told the world.
You probably thought most of these women in this book have autism. You're the only one who hasn't mentioned it. Why do I belong in this book? But yet, you got to understand, Mandy chose you for asked you for a reason.
Yeah.
And talking to Mandy, she knows what she knows. She's a brilliant woman. I
Yes,
mean, just
yes.
talking to her, you can feel the energy coming from her. She's
Yes.
passionate about what she does. And she literally, when we were just talking, and she's like, I'm actually thinking about writing a book but this time with the men. And I'm like, well, let me know because
Yeah.
I'll share the story with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she
But Maggie
is.
chose you for a reason. She knew you were different. She knew you belonged in the book, so you
Yeah.
have to you got scared because you thought people would look at you differently. I mean, that's how I felt when I was in school, and I originally didn't tell anybody. I wanted to start as a fresh slate. But I did start telling people, and hey, look what happened.
Yeah.
They accepted me for me.
Yeah, and before, well, I'm sorry. Before the book came out, I did a podcast, and I'm so sorry, my dog's barking. I did a
No, sorry.
podcast and was just it everything was fine. It was like, no big deal. And but it was it made me step out of my comfort zone. And so I did a little blurb, a little video for Mandy, because she was asking, what did being in this book do for you? And I said, well, it helped me step out of my comfort zone. I just did a podcast and I actually feel okay about it. And now I actually I'm out of my comfort zone, and I get scared at times that what am I doing? After I read my chapter and I had a weird reaction, I canceled the podcasts that I was scheduled for. I just like wanted to hide, and I didn't know I was going to react that way. And it took me, I was talking to a friend, and I said, I don't know if I'm up for this, for, being a speaker, for being in front of a camera, for writing and for doing all this. Like, I kind of just want to be a hermit again. And the funniest thing happened that night after I got off that phone call, and I was telling her that I got notification that there's some magazines that want to put my story in from the book, and they want pictures of me and my best friend, who it's about, and put it in a magazine. And so I'm like, well, that sounds cool. Okay, I agreed to that. And then I had a couple of clients come up all of a sudden for readings, and I had this happen, and then it's like things are coming to me, which are clearly stating you are not going to go back to being a hermit.
Good for you.
So this is my path. This is my mediumship and giving readings and being a psychic. That is my path. That is my soul's purpose and healing. I'm also a healer. And any way, shape, or form that I can heal. And if it's through my telling my story, I'm going to do that because I'm a healer.
And finally, what advice do you have for those who are creative and different?
Be glad. I mean, who wants to be boring? You know what I mean? Who wants to be, you miss out on life if you try to hide how you're different. I say embrace it. And I know it's easy to say and can be very hard to do. But once you do it and you start to feel freer, like once I told, all of my family and friends that I was a psychic medium, and I went to a psychic fair and I did readings there and this and that, and I was on a show actually doing readings. I felt free. And I felt like, I'm just going to go up to my son and say, hey, son, I'm a psychic medium. What do you think of that? And he's like, yeah, I know. I already know. So I would really encourage them to embrace their uniqueness and be who they are.
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Reed Mile. That's Shelley Devine. I'll see you in the next one. Thank you, Shelley.
Thank you so much.
Not a problem. See you in the next one, everybody.